Hey guys, this is Ishai Breslauer and welcome to the CRE Shark Eye Show, where we discuss commercial real estate. On Mondays, we dive deep into an asset class, and on Thursdays, we go into some inspirational stories for the weekend. Can't wait to start. Let's go. Hey guys, before we continue, I would like to introduce you to the 7-Day CRE Challenge, which will introduce you to commercial real estate and will show you that anyone can do this. Also, I have the free cheat sheet for commercial real estate with the 6 best secrets for commercial real estate. You can download it free. Just click below or above, wherever it is, and get it. Let's continue. Hi, guys. This is Ishai Breslauer, the CRE Shark Eye Show, and it's great to have you today because today we have a distinguished guest, Mike Marshalls of Marshall Hotels and Resorts. We're going to hear so much about the hospitality industry that we want to hear for so long. I know that Thursdays are lighter usually, and we get into inspirational stories, and it's less tense, it's less in-depth like Mondays. But today we have an opportunity to hear someone who could come today, and it's awesome. And we have this opportunity to hear from someone who is in the industry, in the depth of the industry, a company that is involved in so many hotels on the management aspect of things, and we want to hear him. And without further ado, I'm going to bring him up. Mike Marshall, pleasure to have you on the show. Thank you for being here.
It's a pleasure. My pleasure.
Thank you so much. So I hear, first of all, what's going on with you nowadays? Where are you hanging out nowadays? How COVID is treating you and your family?
Well, my entire family got COVID over the holidays, so it's been a lot of fun. So if I start breaking into a nasty ass cough, then I apologize in advance.
No problem. First of all, we wish you fast recovery to you and your family and everybody around you, and that's the most important thing, the top important thing. And I know it because in my family we had COVID also, but we had it pretty light, thank God. And I wish that it would go away as soon as possible from your family, and only good things. What can I tell you? So thanks again for being here. Where are you in the world nowadays?
I am temporarily located in Cape Coral, Florida. I'll be here through the 1st of February. When we started looking at, typically we go on a Christmas vacation, and I've got too many family members now. I got kids getting married and all this stuff, and it's staying in a resort is not really that much of an issue. I mean, it's too many people, too many bartenders. So the last few years I've been splitting a house with my brother-in-law, and we got plenty of people. We probably had 10 people here last night. So we just run people in and out. So it's an easier, with this COVID this year, we decided that, hey, let's do something where people don't have to be at a set space, a set place at a set time. We can just have a little more creativity, and people can come and go as they please. And as it turns out, that was a good thing because my wife is still at home because she got COVID the worst of anybody in the family.
Unbelievable. So again, fast recovery. It's not fun. COVID is not a fun thing, without a doubt. So what we want to do, first of all, Mike Marshall is the president and CEO of Marshall Hotels and Resorts, a very serious company that does a lot of, it's a third-party management company. Mike is going to tell us all about it, but you know what? Let's start with that. Let's start with, actually, Mike, tell us a little bit about what your company does. What do you guys do?
Yeah, so as you said, we're a third-party management company that focuses almost 100% on hotels. Now, there's certainly the resort aspect where we also manage golf courses, we've managed marinas, we've managed anything, but there's always had to be associated with a hotel. The company itself has zero ownership in any of the properties. I have, percentage ownership, sliver equity in a handful of hotels. Actually, I sold most all my holdings at the end of last year, beginning of this year.
Without knowing COVID is happening, that's pretty impressive.
But I knew an election was going to happen. So I knew something was going to upset the apple cart one way or the other. I just didn't think it was going to be COVID. And I also knew that depending on the outcome of the election, I was looking at you know, our lowest capital gains taxes in history almost. So I'll just go ahead and cash out and take my profits and go ahead and pay the taxes. But back to the company, my father started this company in 1980. So we celebrated our 40th year this year. And we're third party management. We manage hotels. Thanks. Manage hotels from Florida to Vermont to Michigan to Texas. We just opened the hotel last week in Fort Worth, Texas. So, you know, we're actually still opening a number of hotels that have been in the pipeline for well over a year. Some of them are opening in New York, which I'm like, come on, guys, you don't really want to open in New York right now. But right. because of various and sundry debt-related items, they have to open. So,
right, they have to have something coming in.
Yeah, and the hotel we opened in Fort Worth, we only opened for one day last week. We had to be open for the end of the year. But so we got open, got our CO, and stayed open for a night, then shut it back down for another 3 weeks before we'll reopen again. But, you know, different deals have different requirements, which is fine. Right. So that's the interesting thing that we do. I mean, we don't specialize in any one particular hotel asset. We don't specialize in any one particular geographic type of area. You know, we're a company that is able to be very nimble on our feet when it comes to understanding the individual hotel, the individual market, and the individual owner, what that individual owner's need is.
Listen, this is very interesting because you guys are spread out in so many things and we're going to have a lot to talk about today. So this is going to be interesting. So everybody who's listening, please tune in. By the way, some of the people who are listening are always from the same industry or people who are pros or have companies, different things that are related to that or different things, different type of businesses that are related to commercial real estate. And we have also the beginners, meaning we have also people who want to get into the industry and try to understand what it is and try to get inspired. And for that purpose, I would like to ask you how it all started for you, meaning it's a big company, you guys doing a lot of things. Maybe you want to go back to your father, you as a young person, you as a young man. How did it all begin?
Well, I mean, I started as a dishwasher at the local Holiday Inn when I was 15 years old.
That's awesome.
I've spent, you know, I've done every job there is possible to do in a hotel. My mother encouraged me to stay away from the hotel business because my father at the time was a general manager. So he was, worked a lot of long, hard hours, wasn't home that often. And so my mother's like, you need to find a different way to work because it's just not healthy for family relationships. And I tried and I went to a liberal arts school and got a degree in history. But at the end of the day, I enjoyed the hotel business and I guess I was kind of good at it. But I've done everything from, like I said, dishwasher. I was a carpenter on a hotel. I built a hotel. So I've done every aspect, which is a little bit, although if you look at it, if you look at the most of the top executives throughout the industry, they've all started at some part, at some point in the business, because, you know, this is an industry where you have to be able to talk to a dishwasher, but then you also have to be able to talk to a Wall Street banker. So,
right.
And being able to understand the vernacular of each one is how you get to be well-rounded and understanding of the entire industry. But again, I was at a conference a couple of years ago and someone said, you know, please raise your hand if you started in the hotel industry, making minimum wage. And yeah, 80% of the people in the room raise their hands. So that's really where you have to start. Yeah, it's where you have to start because you have to get that ability to understand. And my son is getting ready to start working for our company next week. But after he graduated college, he says, having never worked in the hotel business. Now he worked retail and he worked restaurants and whatnot. But he said, "Listen, I think I want to work in the hotel business." I said, that's great, but you're going to have to start at the bottom. He's like, what do you mean? I said, nobody's going to hire you. You've got no experience. So he started as a banquet setup person at a hotel in Greenville, South Carolina. And then within a year, he had worked himself up into a sales position. So they recognized his work ethic and they recognized his acumen, but he still had to do it. You just can't open a door and have something fly open for you. So it was a humbling for him, to say the least.
But tell me something. When did it start for you? Or meaning, when did your father was a guy? He was a general manager, right? When did Marshall Hotels start as a business?
Okay, so and what happened was in 1980, my father had in 78 he left the hotel business for a couple of years to be a community manager at a residential community, and just got killed. I mean, he was able to turn around all the food and beverage outlets to where they were making money, the golf course to where it started making money. This was a big community at 60 miles of roads. But he's dealing with boards of directors out of mostly retired government officials out of DC who didn't understand business, let alone how to run a community. So he got a buyout and spent the next 6 months putting a deal together that, with the help of my uncle is a very successful commercial real estate guy in Chicago. And they really put together a limited partnership where the majority of the limited partners were professional hockey players in Chicago, because the syndicating attorney was from Chicago. So they bought three hotels. So my father, who again had been unemployed for about 6 months, was able to put together this group to buy these three hotels. And he was the managing general partner. You got a percentage of equity for helping put the deal together. And those same three hotels sold 4 years later. And to this day, we still work with the family that bought them in 1984.
Wow.
Now most of the patriarchs have died, moved along, but we're still working with them. So that started it and then if you look at it, the tax that we did those three hotels and a big hotel in downtown Chicago, a hotel in High Point, North Carolina, a hotel in Columbus, Ohio, all done the same syndication route. And then the tax laws changed in 86, 87. So the ability to do those types of deals had gone away. And from then on, my father really went after the third party management aspect, which was just in its infancy, primarily taking over bankrupt and distressed properties and getting them turned around. So the company became a turnaround specialist and started doing work across the country. I mean, we had a hotel in California. At one point in time, we were running a hotel in Ireland. But it's the company has evolved as the real estate has evolved, as the industry has evolved. And if you look back at, I mean, even when I was a general manager of a hotel, I'm 23 years old, I'm a GM of a hotel, and I'm trying to save money, I'm doing this, I'm doing that, I'm buying the cheapest beds I can buy, I'm buying used beds. I'm like, come on, man, what Barry Sternlicht hadn't come up with a heavenly bed yet. So we were still a industry that did not understand the hospitality effect. Now the high end did, the higher end, your luxury properties certainly understood it, but not that many people could afford to stay in luxury hotels back then. So you're basically looking at your roadside Holiday Inns, and Comfort Inn just came out in the early 80s and or the mid 80s, actually. I mean, Hampton Inn started in 1986. So we had a proliferation of new hotels and new brands starting, but we still, as an industry, didn't understand that we were in the hospitality business. We were just lucky to be there. You know, back then we only had one hotel on every corner. Now we've got eight on every corner. So, and there's so many different brands, and the industry has just kind of evolved over time. And And we've evolved with it, and we've gone through, you know, this is our fourth major economic downturn that we've been through. So we've seen each one, we've lived through each one, we've come out stronger after each one. And
that's the power of experience.
Yeah, absolutely. It is. And I'm only 56 years old, but I started young. So
I love what you say only.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm not too far behind you, but it's good. It's good. Young and restless. And you know what? The beauty of your story is that the younger, like you started this whole thing, this younger generation is not kicking in. They're coming into the business. They're coming in to participate in it. That's, I think, the beauty of it, because that's how it's evolving, and that's how they will learn how to get out of downturns and how to get the business to the next and higher level. And that's the beauty of this whole thing. And you know what? Another thing is that, you know, the hotel industry, the way I see it from, you know, more on the outside, we have the ownership side that cannot do without you guys, the third-party management. A lot of people, when it comes to, for example, multifamily or even retail, is easier because you have the net lease, you know, setting and so on. In hotels, you really got to, like you said, you got to start from the bottom. You got to know what you're doing. So hotel ownership has absolutely, you have to understand, and that's my next question to you. You have to really understand the industry and the numbers, but management in depth, you will have to get the top management company to run the show, because you can't do it on your own. Doesn't matter how you think you will. But I want to ask you another question now. You've been involved in development, hotel development. Can you tell us a little bit about it? The experience, what do you need to know if you do that? What are the requirements? What is important? Where are the risks?
Sure. Just because you own a piece of land doesn't mean it needs to be a hotel on it.
Exactly.
Unfortunately, and what's gotten us as in trouble as an industry over the years, and every time there's a major economic upturn, you know, people start building hotels. Anytime lenders are out there willing to lend, you're building hotels. And you get into a situation where, you're not, sometimes in some markets, it's not that you're overbuilt, you're under demolished, because most hotels have a shelf life. And when you get into it, people don't understand the various different markets. I mean, how many brands are out there? How many brands that I don't even know that are out there? And I mean, you got Marriott alone has 31 different brands. Hilton has some 26 or 27 different brands. So they all fit within different niches within the thing. So if you're looking at a piece of land and you're saying, well, first of all, does the hotel even need to be there? Probably not. I mean, unless it's a really, you know, up and coming market, unless you're in the Charlotte or Atlanta areas where you're seeing a tremendous economic boom. A lot of it, people, or you know, most of Florida markets. I mean, if you look in 2019 at the top 10 one-way rental U-Haul markets, Raleigh, North Carolina was number one. So the Triangle was number one. I think Austin was top three, and then 7 out of the top 10 markets were in Florida. And why is that? Because people are getting the hell out of New York and New Jersey and Connecticut, where the price, and this is all pre-COVID. So it's just, you can afford to live there anyway. And major, I mean, I have a hotel in Somerset, New Jersey that sits in a lot of different office buildings in a park there. And 4 years ago, MetLife was headquartered there, U.S. headquarters there. They just left, and they had like 60,000 square feet of space. Or if not more, I think they had two buildings. They had 120,000 square feet, and they moved to Charlotte.
Unreal.
Those jobs are never coming back. Those people are never coming back to stay at that DoubleTree again. I have clients that are constant, that are looking to buy. I mean, I spend most of my days looking at hotel deals, looking at, you know, hotels that are for sale, looking at the notes that are for sale, looking at continued development deals. People still want to build. And And the first thing I asked people, I said, where's the business coming from? And, you know,
what's the first thing you're looking at when you see, for example, you have a land to develop and you see it's a, let's say, you know, the market goes to hotels and you want to build a hotel over there. And what's the first thing you're going to look at?
First thing I'm going to do is pull a Smith Travel trend report. So Smith Travel Research is a company that gathers information on a daily basis from all the different hotel chains and some independent hotels. All my independent hotels also offer up this information. And what happens is I get a very in-depth look at each market on a daily basis as to what the occupancy is, what the average rate is, what kind of group business is in there. And there are other tools out there as well, but that's, to me, the easiest thing for me to do is just take a look at the market and the trends of the market. So I can pull a 6-year trend so I can see what that market's been doing over that time. I can see where new supply has come in, how that new supply has been absorbed. And then I can extrapolate that information and determine whether or not the market can absorb further new supply. That's the easiest thing to do, because let me just see what the hotel market itself is doing. And then I'm going to look at the demographics, and then I'm going to look at the companies that are in there. And then I'm going to talk to, you know, the CVB and the different powers that be in the market to see, you know, is there even a need for a hotel? And then what kind of hotel does it need?
Exactly. Is it a resort? Is it 300 keys? Is it a 40? Yeah. What is it? How do you make that decision?
Right. And it's right now, a lot of people are going the boutique route. And
why is that, by the way? What do you think?
I can tell you. I mean, it's the same reason why I do it. I mean, and I think it's going to be even more exasperated. But the fact of the matter is, your cookie cutter Hampton Inn is a cookie cutter Hampton Inn. You know exactly what you're going to get. You know, there's little change from one Hampton Inn to the next. So a lot of people have decided that, you know, while they want those points, I mean, I'm sitting on, I think I have 1.4 million Hilton points right now. I'm going to use them eventually, probably, but
right away.
But here's the thing: the both Hilton and Marriott at the beginning of the pandemic went to American Express to raise capital, and they sold a gazillion points each. I mean, they raised $1 billion, both companies, by pre-selling points. Well, now they're in all this thing. They keep adding. They keep doing these things. Hey, stay. You get extra points. That's going to devalue the points themselves. So a year from now, where I might have used 40,000 points for a free night, it might cost me 65,000 points. You're going to start pissing off those clients that were, you know, your customer base who were using those points to fund future trips. Now those future trips are going to be farther out of reach because you've devalued the points because you pre-sold them to keep your company alive. In theory. Now you're going to see the same thing with the airline industry as well. You've already seen it where a lot of these airlines. So what happens now is you start getting your traveler, your businessman, the guy who's on the road like you used to be, you know, every other week. And they're going to start saying, you know what? I would much rather focus on the quality of my stay, on the experience of my stay, than I would on what brand I'm staying in or what cookie cutter type of hotel I'm staying in. So the boutique, and especially the younger traveler. You know, someone my daughter's age, who's in her late 20s, she's married, she's an attorney, you know, they're looking for an experience. So they want to go stay someplace where there's something else going on, where there's you can put it on your Instagram or whatever that crap is. that's the 56 part of me. But it's they're looking for an experience. And that's why the boutique industry is thriving and will continue to thrive, because it's just not about putting your head in a bed. I mean, that's how we still sell things, is heads and beds. But there are so many travelers today, and especially I think when this stuff reopens, where they're going to say, "Listen, man, I'm sick and tired of being in the house, but I'm just not going to go stay at a hotel to stay at a hotel. I'm going to go stay at a hotel because I want to enjoy something. I want an experience."
That's so interesting. Let me ask you this. We all know what happened about a year ago. Now it's almost a year now, right? Yep. Almost a year. COVID hit. What happened to you guys? What do you do? How did you pivot? What did you do at that point? And how did you feel it in the business? Of course you felt, but if you could elaborate a little bit about what happened, how the decision-making process came into play, and what did you guys do?
So we made a decision very early as a company to close as few properties as possible, knowing that, you know, it's like a locomotive engine. You know, those locomotive engines, they keep them fired up all night long, because it takes so much energy if you shut them down to get them up and running to where they can actually pull a train again. And, you know, we said, listen, we're going to keep our best employees working. Unfortunately, we absolutely laid off most all of our line level employees, to where we had all of our managers that were working the front desk, that were cleaning rooms, that were doing everything that needed to be done. But we wanted to show the local communities that we were there for them. So even if
we, you how did you do that? Meaning, well, in terms of what? Showing them?
Well, because, so let's say there was a death in a family, see, and you had to bring people in from outside. I mean, you're not trying to travel, but you're still traveling because the matriarch of your family is dying. So by having the hotel that was there and open, we were still serving the community a purpose. And then up in New York, in our properties there, I mean, we have a Hampton Inn in Yonkers that stayed full for the whole first part of the pandemic, just because that was the hotbed. Westchester was a hotbed right there. And we had nurses and doctors and you know, all these people staying at our hotel that needed someplace to stay, whether they're staying there in shifts or what have you. And at our New York properties, we actually did better by staying open initially, because there were so many medical personnel that were flocking into the city to help support what was going on. Now, butkus, there's nothing going on. I mean, we're lucky to do 10% of the business that we did this time last year. And that's been going on since September.
Crazy.
There's nothing going on in Manhattan. Nothing.
Okay, we're going to talk about the locations in a second. But the one thing that is really interesting, COVID hit, you had to, unfortunately, you know, take the hit just like everybody else and make sure that you actually stick around and make sure that the hotels are functioning, help the communities, which is a beautiful take. I love that part. Then time goes by and we all understood in the beginning, we didn't know what it is, right? Now we do understand what it is. The vaccine is out there. We'll take a little time. Everybody got it. I got it, by the way, but at least the first shot. But the one thing that is interesting and that I want to ask you, where are we now in this whole cycle? And where are we going with this? Where are we now? Where are we going with this? And let's take the general outlook and then we'll start dissecting it. We'll start digging in. And like you said, Manhattan, we're going to go through Florida, et cetera. But first, in general, where is this industry now? Where is it going? How is it going to come out of the ashes, as we call it? Because a lot of people really got really hit bad.
Yeah, well, I want to make one point too, that as a company, and again, this is our fourth major economic downturn, we didn't furlough or get rid of anybody in our corporate offices. I've always seen this as an opportunity to be stronger on the back end, and where you see Hilton and Marriott and IHG and Hyatt all getting rid of 85% of their employees, yet they're still charging franchise fees. And boy, if you don't pay them, they let you know. But we're going to come out of this. We always do. The question is, I mean, right now, I'm in Florida. The hotels along the coast have actually done well throughout this pandemic. The hotels in the interior in the Orlando market have not done well because Disney's been shut down. Universal's been shut down. There's no reason to go there. At least along the beach areas, you still have the beach. Ocean City, Maryland, we were wide open all summer long to the point where we couldn't get any employees. I mean, there's been so many different
moving parts
and tribulations. Yeah. I mean, you get to the point where all of a sudden you reopen at the beaches and in the Mid-Atlantic region, but I can't rent rooms because I don't have enough people to clean the rooms. Why don't I have enough people to clean the rooms? Because the government is paying more in unemployment benefits than what I can afford to pay to clean the rooms.
Yes.
So what do I have to do? I got to go to Florida. I get three buses of women to come up to clean my rooms where I put them up for 4 months because just so I could clean my rooms. So my cost of doing business went up tremendously. However, I'm not sitting there with vacant rooms. And because of the stimulus checks that went out, there were people that were staying in hotels that probably should have not ever stayed in hotels because they certainly didn't know how to act. So they were even harder on the rooms, and they were harder on communities.
Wow, why did they go to the hotels to stay in the rooms? Because of COVID or just
because they were given money? All of a sudden, they woke up one morning and they had a couple extra grand in their savings account, in their bank account. They're like, "Oh, we're tired of being cooped up. Let's go stay at the hotel at the beach."
That's unbelievable.
It is, but again, it proves that no matter where you are on a political spectrum, this so much of all this stuff that's happened has been political in nature. And nobody thinks anything out before they make a decision. It's just like we were talking beforehand. You guys are going into lockdown again starting today.
Crazy. Yeah.
Why?
Life is crazy. That's the way it is. Life is crazy. 100%. Tell me something. Let's go a little bit, talk about New York. You know, we know New York very well. And what was before, what is going on now, and how do you see the future in New York and Manhattan, particularly Manhattan?
All right, so Manhattan, I think that 30% of the hotels will not reopen ever.
Wow.
And that's just
not true. And that's because primarily?
Unions.
Can you explain about that a little bit?
Yeah. So the New York Union, Local Unite Here, is very, very strong. The mayor loves all unions. The governor loves all unions. The big chains have been very accommodating for the unions. Unfortunately, the unions have not been accommodating during this downturn. And there is legislation out there by the mayor's office pretty much saying that if you're going to open a hotel, you got to open it as a union hotel. Well, number one, that's just not competitive advantage. But number two, for most hotels that are non-union, you're still paying union wages. You're just not paying that 30 or 40% on top of it, which is what eats into the operating margins. Now, there are other work-related ideas, like you have to have so many people. Like right now, if you stay at a hotel, we're not cleaning saver rooms anywhere. CDC says, hey, have as little contact as possible. So if you're staying at a hotel for a week, you know, you can get fresh towels, but you're not getting that room clean. Well, in places like New York, San Francisco, Portland, LA, they want somebody in that room every day because that generates more hours, which generates more union fees and due income. So you get into these bigger boxes in Manhattan that have been there for years, and there's rules and regulations about how many doormen are supposed to be there, how many bell people are supposed to be there, how many people are supposed to be cleaning the public areas, and this, that, and the other thing. And there's no group business. There's no meeting business. We're doing 10% of the business we were doing before, yet the union rules require that you have all these positions filled,
right?
Which is why many of those hotels are still shut down, because it costs them. I mean, there's no revenue coming in means there's no revenue to go out.
So they make you take these people, give them jobs that are not required while nothing is coming in, and you have to actually feed. So
yes,
that's crazy. Yes. That is crazy. That is crazy. Now, let me ask you this. Where does everything come and relates to debt service when it comes to the person who actually owns the hotels and has to come up with, you know, and meet the debt service and pay it on time? How are the banks treating it? You know, how is it going? Going now?
I mean, that's the one thing where there's been some light at the end of the tunnel, where most lenders have been willing to extend terms of the loans. We saw this happen back in 2008 as well, where they called it extend and pretend, where, you know, let's just keep extending and pretending that they're going to eventually be able to pay us, which they did for the most part. Now, where we're seeing some problems is there were hotels in trouble before this started, because again, they're in markets that had been overconstructed. They're just too many new hotels in the market. Manhattan is one of them. I mean, you look at all the stuff that's being built in Long Island City, Brooklyn, Jersey. I mean, it's just the whole market was overbuilt and going in the wrong way. So there were hotels that were in trouble before this started. This just exacerbated it.
It just, triggered the whole thing. Yeah.
Yeah. So right now we still are seeing the CMBS market where there's no real clarity. The lenders don't want the hotels back, but at the same time, they want to get as much piece of flesh out of the owners as possible. So while their negotiations, the negotiations are very slow. You are seeing owners who have decided that, hey, you know what? I got 10 hotels. I'll sell two at a loss just to keep my other eight alive. Or they have five hotels. I'm going to sell one at a loss to keep the other four alive. So you've seen a lot of that happening with owner developers, where they're being systematic in maybe throwing out a sacrificial lamb, which is helping to keep the lenders happy, because it's helping to keep some of those bad loans off the books. Now the other thing that's happened is that the federal government has been very lenient on what constitutes a bad loan that's on your books. So, you know, so it's not, you're not triggering banking regulations because you've got so much bad loans on your books. So I fully expect, you go back to, when is this going to all end? This is going to, I think, the second quarter, mid to the second quarter this year, we're going to start seeing people traveling again. Not in the vast droves. I think the third quarter, we're going to start seeing business people back out on the road again. To me, it's going to be when, you know, international travel opens again, when you start having airlines that are flying at more than, you know, 30% of what they were flying before. We're not going to see the group business come back until probably 2022.
Yeah,
we're not going to see we're not going to get back to 2019 levels until 2023, maybe 2024. But again, that's going to be an individual market by market basis.
Exactly. I mean, it'll take time.
Yeah. I got a contract right here. I'm getting ready to sign to open a new hotel in Brooklyn. Do they need a new hotel in Brooklyn? No, but they're going to open it. So they need somebody to run it. I'll run it.
Interesting. Tell me something. I want to ask you, I want to shift the conversation a little bit, and I want to focus a little bit on the types of hotels that are out there. Because today, as opposed to what was years ago, every single hotel group has a segment, right? It has like hotels and resorts, classic hotels, bed and breakfast, inns, this, that, whatever, boutique. You name it, there's a name for it. And you know all of this, so we have you now. I want to ask you, how in terms of the industry and in terms of revenues and in terms of the bottom line and the NOI that we are actually looking for, which hotel is the most profitable, meaning which, I would say, type of hotel is most profitable? Why is it that way? And what are the differences, I would call, in running these shows when it comes to practicality, from your point of view and business of managing it?
Well, you know, right, believe it or not, right now the most profitable hotels are the economy chains. The economy hotels where, you know, they've stayed full throughout this nonsense because you had workers in there. You had, you know, construction workers. People are still doing projects. You know, we didn't see any major construction projects dry up. We didn't see any major, you still have the overhauls of nuclear power plants across the country. You still have this, that, and the other thing where, you know, you got guys that travel around the country to do these jobs. They're staying, you know, at hotels that cost $50-$60 a night, and you know they're sometimes sleeping in shifts because it's grunt work. But those hotels saw the least amount of downturn.
Wait, you're talking about the Econo Lodge types?
Yeah, exactly. Like a Days Inn or Motel 6.
Yeah.
Red Roof Inn, absolutely. And there are a ton of hotels like that out there now. From a management company standpoint, it's hard as hell to make money on that. Now, your margins are actually okay, but if you're only renting a room for $50 a night, you're only renting a room for $50 a night. Right. Now, I'm not offering the same free breakfast. I'm not offering all this other stuff that I would at say, a Hampton Inn. So then you get into the mid-market, which is your Hampton Inns, your Fairfield Inns, Holiday Inn Expresses and whatnot. Mm-hmm. Those become more profitable to operate because you're selling rooms for $100 a night instead of $50 a night. And you still have the same overhead, except you're spending more on free breakfast. You're spending more on this, that, and the other thing. You're giving away points that you weren't giving away at some of these at the Econo Lodge and whatnot. But you're able to hire a better quality front desk clerk or manager because you're getting a higher room rate. So if I'm looking at things, if I'm putting my money into something, I'm saying, all right, I want to be at the highest average rate that I can be and higher than occupancy in the marketplace. So I'm looking at, I'm going to be running a certain RevPAR percentage, which is what's my fair share. I want to be getting at least 125% of my fair share. So there are certain brands that allow you to do that. That being said, you know, you can be profitable. Let's say you build that sucker within the 10 years. You've refinanced it twice. You put money in pocket, but then you go like in 10 years, then you've got this huge product improvement plan just to stay within the brand. Now the brand has evolved over time. So all of a sudden they want this, that, and the other thing. So now you've got to spend, say, $25,000-$30,000 a key just to maintain the brand standard. So then you go to sell it. you know, I've got all this equity built up. I've got $2 million in equity. I'm going to sell my hotel. Except, though, yeah, the new guy is going to have to spend $2 million just to maintain the franchise. So at the end of the day, it's one of these things where you just can't fall in love with the real estate. And it goes back to your question on development. You know, let's build something. Let's sell it in 5 years. Move on to the next project. Give that next guy another 5 years before any big money has to be spent on the hotel. It's just, and then you get into this, because most of these licenses are 20-year licenses. So, and then at the end of 20, you're really in a pickle, because now they probably want all kinds of exterior renovations. They want you to change the look of the hotel itself, because they've someone to sit in some big office saying, oh, you know what? We need to look different. You know, we're stale.
So what happens if that, let's pause for a second on that one. If I have the hotel, I have a 20-year lease, okay, with meaning a franchise of a big company that, you know, I have this big signage, this big brand, beautiful, 20 years happens what you said now. They're coming in with all these demands and all these things that changed over time. And they say, now, if you want to keep up with the, you know, this brand, you'll have to do A, B, C, and D, and all the way up. All the way down, all the way up again. Here's a question. What is the future of that type of a property? Of a deal? What is the future? What can you do with it?
It depends on where you are, too. You know, here's the thing. If you're in a secondary, tertiary location, you've probably done a stick build because you can get away with it. Well, you do a
it's just like in multifamily, A class, B class, C class, and that's it.
So if you're smart enough to be able to spend the money up front and do a concrete and plank, then you've got, after the end of 20 years, you have a concrete and plank building. If you did a stick build, you got a stick build building after 20 years. So your economic future is a lot worse with that type of construction.
Yeah.
So again, when you go back to there's so many questions on the initial development front that should be answered that often are not answered simply because you're trying to build something for as cheap as possible that you don't look 20 years down the road. You're just looking at getting the thing open.
Right. So where are hotels and resorts, the resorts aspect of it, where are they in this whole segment?
So a resort is more of a master planned community. You don't see as many of those being built today because right. You've got miles of roadway that are involved. You've got, you know, your own sewer and water stations. So a resort is something that's much more of a gamut that you're looking at, that you're probably trying to figure out a way how to sell additional real estate. Maybe it's timeshare, maybe it's condos, maybe it's something else. So you're building different infrastructure like tennis courts, golf courses, spas to create an additional way to increase the value of that land.
So you got a lot more components, obviously.
You got a lot more components, and you got a lot more. And right now, the resorts are the ones that have been hit the hardest because they can't open their spas. They can't open the capacity that they need to open to. They're not getting the food and beverage options because you might be at 50% capacity on food and beverage or less. So all of a sudden, the resort, the reason for being at that resort because you have so many other things to do, they're all gone. So what happens? You gotta drop your pricing because you're not selling the same thing. Right.
There were so many stories. There was this big hotel in New Jersey. I forgot where exactly. Huge, huge, huge casino or something that was about to open and then didn't open and went off from one owner to another owner, $1 billion, you know, type of a thing. What do you think about all those monstrosities that people have a big dream? They want to spend all this money on those things. And then what is the future of those existences?
So you're talking about the Revel in Atlantic City. And you know what? Those types of developers are the ones that use somebody else's money. So they're making their money one way or the other.
I got it. So you're saying this fund has this, they have to get some activity going, they get excited about this, they're getting in. But I tend to, I don't know if I agree on that point, because the money is being made from one angle and then is not being made from another angle, meaning someone has to lose the money.
Right.
Someone has to go. I don't know if you saw the, you know, National Treasure movie with the Nicolas Cage.
Yeah.
But if you saw that movie, the guy says, someone has to go to prison. Yeah, he tells him, well, someone needs to lose the money. That's in the bottom line when it comes to those things. So it's obviously not the fund managers and stuff, but, you know, investors obviously will have to lose the money.
Right. And it's the same with the MBS market. I mean, those loans are underwater. I mean, it's the bondholders that are left holding the bag. But let's look at let's go back and look at history again. You know, in the 80s, the Japanese bought up places like Pebble Beach, where they paid 10 times what they were worth, sold them back again. 5 years later, lost all that equity that they had in them. You know, the Chinese have been buying up trophy properties in the U.S. until they started selling last year. Now, if you notice, they sold most all their trophy properties in the U.S. last year. Oh, yeah, right before the COVID hit, but
yeah,
whatever. That's a little conspiracy theory there. I apologize for that. but we just go through cycles. There are economic cycles. That $3.5 billion casino you're talking about, Atlantic City, should have never, ever been built. But guess what? There's so many people have their hands out, whether it be politicians or this guy or the other guy, where so many people made money that...
This guy wants to look good from this end. This one wants to show the investors that something is going on from this end. And the bank has to show we're actually deploying some stuff out. And everybody has to show some action going on. And the GCs get a little bit of action going. So everybody's happy until the, you know, until it hits the fan and the reality comes out. And people are actually not coming in, whether it's COVID or the industry is not going or an airline or the airlines are not working and so on and so forth. So interesting. Before we wrap it up, I would ask you if you could give a tip for anyone listening who is excited about the hospitality industry. I know that today a lot of people got, how do you say, cold feet, you know, after what happened, but some people have this passion, whether they want to become, in the management business or they want to become developers of hotels and resorts, whatever it is. What is the tip that you're going to give people out there? As per everything you went through and what are you seeing?
I mean, you know, this industry has evolved tremendously. I mean, I even go back to my father 15 years ago when the internet started blowing up, when the way that we take and make reservations today changed so dramatically, and that he never figured it out. I mean, the technology side just passed him by, and he just never could figure out why would you go to a computer to make a reservation for a hotel when you can pick up a phone? But you know, and I ended up buying him out at the end of 2012 just because he just couldn't grasp it. I mean, it just passed him by, and it became that angry old man because it had passed him by. So right. I've had to be very careful in my own technological shortcomings to listen to the younger people, to understand that we're going to continue to evolve as an industry, and we're going to continue to, we go back to the whole thing. Why do young people want to stay in boutique hotels? Because they want the experience. So, you know, how do we design our hotels of the future? How do we service our guests of the future? You know, do we continue with some of these draconian touch point issues that we're going on with the COVID time? where, you know, and that too, that's going to go back. I mean, as a human population, we want to interact with each other. We want to be close to each other. We want to talk, and that's going to come back. You know, that's when the vaccines are all here and then. But then right. what happens when the next coronavirus hits? You know, is that a COVID-19 is COVID number 28 or what have you? So we should be thinking about that as we're developing our new spaces, our new public areas, our HVAC systems in the rooms. You know, all those things we should be thinking about now for the inevitable what's going to happen in the future. For someone who wants to get in this business now, the point I'm trying to make is have a very open mind. Don't learn from history. Don't make the same mistakes that we've made in the past. Look forward. But know that as an industry, we've always come back from, and sometimes it takes 4 or 5 years to get back to where we were, but we get back stronger than we were before. So just keep an open mind when you're looking at a development site, make sure that there's something else going on within that market, something that is going to bring people to that market.
Right. What I want to do now is, before we wrap it up, is, and we have exactly 3 minutes, if you could tell us literally in 60 seconds, how can people find you guys, Marshall Hotels and Resorts, and you know, how they get in touch with you? I obviously put the link in the bottom, but if you could tell people how they can find you guys, who they can get in touch with.
Yeah, I mean, the easiest thing is to go to marshallhotels.com. Marshall 2 L's, all one word, .com. That'll show
the links
you.
Links are below, guys, above or below, depends on the, mm-hmm. in the platform.
So, again, and feel free to send us an email or call us or I'm not in the office, but, I've got a business development guy named Scott McMahon who can also help. I mean, I would much rather tell somebody no. To tell somebody yes and just get through a lot of heartache over the years. I mean, I spend more time telling people no, that it's not a good idea to build this hotel or buy this hotel or do something with this property, because some things just don't make any sense. So I would rather have the opportunity to get to introduce you, know you, look at your project, and then either say yes or no.
Interesting. Mike Marshall, thank you so much for this. If you could stick around for a second, I'm going to say goodbye to everybody else, and then we'll just wrap it up between us. But thank you so much for being here, for being on this show.
It's my pleasure.
And you guys, find the links, get in touch with Mike Marshall, the Marshall Hotels and Resorts. He has a team there, and they could actually look at your deal. If you're a hotel person and you're getting into a deal, you need to hear from professionals, from people with such experience. If it's good, should I get into it? Or should I not? Thank you, Mike. Appreciate your time. Hey, guys. Thanks for joining me in this CRE Shark Eye Show. I hope you enjoyed it. And go subscribe, download, do whatever you guys need to do. And I'll see you in the next episode. Take care of yourselves.